Independent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this March the 19th on the West Coast, March the 20th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zones. We'd also like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and give a shout-out to all those in the U.S. military. And to those folks listening on blogtalkradio.com as well as all the listeners on BBS Radio. Well, today, the 19th on the West Coast and everywhere else, was the anniversary of the attack on Iraq. And if that's anything to celebrate, I think the numerology of that date was the number 13. The month and the day added up to a 13. Isn't that interesting how they pick those dates out? Of course, where is Iraq today? Well, same place it was before. Where are all the people? Well, millions of people fled the country. At least 1.5 million were murdered. Many American soldiers died or became ill because of what they incurred in the arena of forced vaccinations, exposure to depleted uranium, and who knows what bioweapons were used. All these strange, what they like to call advanced or secret technologies that were used on Iraqi soldiers had to have had some impact on Americans as well. The suicide rate has skyrocketed amongst people in the military. A lot of that's been attributed to pharmaceutical drugs given to them for depression and other maladies. And it's insane what's going on in the world. And this is not something new. In fact, tonight we're going to discuss some of the ancient technologies that have been around for thousands of years, and we may even discuss some societies that are little known to the majority of people around the world. We've been spoon-fed garbage in our history classes from the time we were young children, causing us to believe that that life on this planet has been for a very short amount of time. And I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that if that is the case, if we've only been here for 10,000 years or 12,000 years, then the Creator really messed up when he made this place. And, of course, I'm speaking tongue-in-cheek. If anyone knew what was going to go on in a free will universe, the Creator did. And we're going to talk about some structures and the associated civilizations, if that's the correct term, with those structures, and talk about how these structures are actually found all over this planet. Now, in many cases, this has been hidden from the average individual, and why everything has to be a secret is beyond me, except I guess if you're a reptilian, you don't want anybody to know that. They're not very popular beings these days. With that, I invite a very popular being back to the show, as I do every Friday night. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he's my co-host and our resident science advisor here at Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. Thank you very much. It's always good to be with you.
Well, Jim, last week you and I talked about, actually, we spent some time talking about a solution to many of the people's problems when it comes to getting an invention out. And I don't know if you and George have been getting any calls, but we'll keep getting the word out that there are technologies being developed. And if anyone out there is looking for someone to assist them in the whole process of bringing an idea, an invention, something that they feel can improve upon already existing technology or basic devices. It doesn't have to be high science. You're available, and George, through your company, Accurate Machine and Tool, to assist people in getting things built, what we call prototypes, and we may talk about that some more before this month is over. So we spent most of last show talking about that, and we had determined that we were going to go into another topic and talk about some of the technology that seems to have an interplanetary nature to it. And, of course, I'm speaking about the pyramid. And I know you have a lot of things to share with the listeners. So I turn the mic over to you. And, of course, feel free to include me at any time.
All right. I'll consider that, considering it's your show.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things, you know, about the pyramids. To be honest with you, when I first heard about so-called pyramid energy, it was way back in the 60s, I believe. And the book that gave me the first exposure to that concept was actually a book called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain. And in there, this was written by Lynn Schroeder and some other gal. I can't think of her name right now. And I thought they did a remarkable job. I mean, they went all around through the Iron Curtain countries in those days and checked out things that were being investigated and were only being done, for the most part, in the East, because the West didn't even believe in them. And I always thought that was an interesting contradiction, because here you have a country which was supposed to be essentially atheistic and communistic and everything else, and they were investigating matters which were essentially spiritual. And then you got the West, which is supposed to be a Christian nation, or nations, and they don't believe in any of that stuff. So I always thought that it was a very interesting conundrum, just to understand the philosophies involved. But getting back to the main topic, the thing that intrigued me the most in that book was the fact that there was actually a patent taken out by a guy in Yugoslavia for a pyramidally shaped razor blade sharpener. And basically the way it worked was very simple. You took your razor blade out of the razor. You know, in the old days, they had the safety razors. You could actually open them and remove the blade. And you placed it on a little pedestal underneath this guy's little styrofoam pyramid, and you left it there for a couple of days. And when you got back, it was sharp again, and you could shave with it for another few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the big question mark was, well, what the heck is going on inside that shape that can actually rearrange the crystalline structure of the razor blade in such a way that it returns to being sharp after having been worn down by your face? And then, of course, there were associated experiments involving the preservation of meat and other vegetable matter and other things which normally would have the tendency to decay and become putrefied in the presence of air, or at least air at normal temperatures. And when you put them underneath this little pyramid, or larger ones, made to the proper proportions, of course, what happened was that the material dehydrated, and it didn't go bad. It just shriveled up. And a lot of experiments were done with the idea of reconstituting stuff like that, taking the vegetable matter and putting it in boiling water, for instance, to put the moisture back in So it was like freeze drying without freezing. You know, it was very interesting stuff. And the first association that I made to it, which I thought was pretty exciting, was I wonder if the pyramidal shape has anything to do with mummification, or did it have anything to do with mummification in the past? And so I got launched into this personal investigation of all this stuff, which is actually still ongoing, I might add. But the thing that I found extraordinarily interesting about the whole deal was that there seemed to be another force operating in this three-dimensional shape, which could do some very strange things. Now, there was a... his name will come to me, but there was a professor, a physics professor, who went over to the Great Pyramid in Egypt and thought that he had found a solution to a method for determining if there were any hidden chambers that had not yet been discovered. And basically, he was going to use cosmic rays. I think his name was Alvarez, if I'm not mistaken. He was going to use cosmic rays to essentially X-ray the pyramids and have scanners positioned inside, which would essentially detect the flux of the cosmic rays coming through, and thereby essentially X-ray the walls of the pyramid and see if there was any hidden chambers involved. And they had all this hooked up to some big IBM computer, and it was essentially going to draw graphs or shadow graphs, which would be the equivalent of the X-ray picture, and demonstrate, you know, whether there was something hidden in the walls that hadn't been discovered yet or not. Well, the interesting thing was, every time they repeated the experiment, they got totally different results. And, you know, the guy said, well, it's just completely impossible, because we know that if we measure the cosmic flux outside of the pyramid, it's reasonably steady, and yet when we do the same experiment inside, it's totally bananas. We get different results all the time. And so I found that particularly amazing, considering the fact that, first of all, I was pretty familiar with high-energy particles, even though I decided not to go into that field. I always had the interest in it. And I was always interested in Egyptology, and you put the two things together, it's a fascinating mix. And so what I was trying to figure out is what the heck could be going on in that space that could actually alter the manner in which the results of this experiment would be produced. Just didn't make sense to me. Well, come to find out a few years later, because I did not know this in those days, that the secret of the entire pyramid's geometry is essentially related to a number called phi, which is approximately 1.618034. And the fascinating thing about phi is that it's part of a ratio which sort of reproduces itself if you take the time to solve it, because the strange part about it is that the equation for it is essentially a quadratic, which is x squared is equal to x plus 1. And when you solve that, you get the positive root is the one that I quoted to you, 1.618, etc. And the negative root is 1 over 0.618, which is a fractional part of the other number. But both of those will solve the equation. And the reason why this thing is so interesting is because the nature of phi is such that if you square the number in the same way that you would square, like, the number 4, and say 4 times 4 is 16, when you square phi, you get 2.618034, which is the same result that you would get if you just added 1 to the original number. So it has some absolutely strange properties to it. And what I learned, of course, was that the pyramids, the secret of the pyramid structure is based on the fact that the cross-section of the pyramid, if you were to cut it from the apex right down through the center of the structure, you would produce a what's known as a golden triangle, which has a height of radical phi and a baseline of essentially 1 and a hypotenuse of phi squared. And so the whole structure has this amazing ratio to it. And the reason that this caught my attention is because when you look at the equation, x squared is equal to x plus 1, that's telling you that a unit of square area can actually be equated to a linear length with absolute certainty, but you have lost the dimension. So what came out of my investigations was that if a square unit can represent a linear line, be represented by a linear line, then a cubic unit could be represented by essentially a unit of square area, and something to the fourth dimension can effectively be represented by a three-dimensional structure.
Such and as so, a sphere? Could you say a sphere, for example?
Well, interestingly enough, it is related to a hemisphere, and so I'm sure that there's a relationship to a sphere. But what I was getting at, quite honestly, Don, is the fact that the reason why some of the things that happen in this shape may manifest themselves is because it could be an interdimensional device.
Mm-hmm.
And that would show you why the experiments were always wrong. It would also give you some insights into why there are constantly spiritual and occult phenomenon associated with the device. And whatever the energy is that manifests in there may be coming from this dimensional anomaly. So, and that's just one tiny fractional part of all of the curiosities associated with this structure. I mean, we could talk about it indefinitely.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to comment on a couple of things you said. The razor blade sharpener, I think, was invented by a Czech scientist by the name of Karel Drbal, D-R-B-A-L, and Carol, some say, but as the first name. Those were issued to the Russian army. There was a point when the army soldiers were making something like $12 a month, and of course they couldn't afford razor blades, so they got a set of razor blades and got one of these razor blade sharpeners, and literally you can make a single up to a 5-blade cartridge last up to a year. I've done it myself. I've made them out of cardboard. I've made true pyramids, and the you know, value of phi, which you're describing, demands that the pyramid itself have specific parameters, and that excludes equilateral triangles for any of the four sides or the four faces, if you want to use that term. And My take on the pyramid is that it is a metaphysical structure that is probably the first orgone accumulator and generator. Both actions take place. The mummification is, in my estimation, a process of the energy that's there that does not permit the growth of bacteria or disease or decay, and decay in organic matter occurs because of bacteria. So it eliminates bacteria. Like you, I've had an interest since I was a very young boy in just looking at pictures of pyramids and reading anything I could on them. It wasn't until the early 1980s that I actually made an intuitive connection to a pyramid, and I became a bit more scientific in my studies in that regard. Certainly a north-south magnetic field permeating two of the opposite faces is critical to how it works. And the pyramids that have been placed in various parts of the earth have all been aligned to what is known as magnetic north. The ones at Giza actually dividing the northern and southern hemisphere exactly in half. So there is truth behind what you're saying, and I just want the listening audience to know that this is certainly not something of a dark nature, how it is used or the rituals that may occur inside the pyramid are one thing. When you consider someone of the ilk of a David Rockefeller being obsessed with pyramidology and things of Egypt, that could be motivated by greed or by the possible use of that information for dark purposes. Certainly, that's not an individual that goes around the world spreading light. So just wanted to make that comment.
Well, I'm glad you did. I mean, it just goes to show you that even something that was originally produced for the benefit of mankind and for good purposes can be perverted if you try hard enough. And I'm sure that they've been trying to do all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians used that shape, by the way, as part of a family of devices that they were playing around with, which were called psychomic generators.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they were exciting was because they actually responded to thought patterns and various modes of concentration and various mental states of the people that were playing around with this stuff. And I built some of them, which were displayed, I think there were one or two of them displayed in Lynn Schroeder's book, but there were also other ones that were eventually disclosed in a publication that was entitled Psychomic Generators. And that's a very interesting book. I forget who published it or who wrote it, but that book came out quite a few years after the Secrets Behind the Iron Curtain book, but it had a whole myriad of shapes that you could concentrate on, and they would respond by doing something. And some of them you could hang by strings, and you could just wait until they were completely in equilibrium, and there was no air currents or anything in the room. And if you glanced at them in a certain mode of concentration, they would begin to spin, or some of them would begin to oscillate like a pendulum. So it's a very, very clear fact for anybody that's open-minded enough to give it consideration that there are forces and energies and geometries, for that matter, which have effects in the world that may not be generally known about or generally noticed.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, as far as the Big Pyramid is concerned, not only does it is its location significant from the standpoint of the longitude and latitude that it's on, but it also happens to reside at the exact center of mass of all the continents. And maybe even more significant is the fact that and this has been a bone of contention for years with especially Egyptologists, because I hate to say it, but they're very prejudicial in their thinking. They just don't want to attribute any advanced knowledge whatsoever to the ancients. I can't understand why, but that seems to be the prevailing attitude. And one of the things that they're against is the fact that that the ancients could possibly know about the precessional movement of the Earth's geodesic pole, or the axis of the Earth, if you want to call it that, which, of course, takes about 26,000 years or 28,000 years to make one complete revolution around its angle of tilt. And the interesting thing is that when they started to look for a correlation between the physical properties and location of the pyramid with the heavens, the initial thought was that it had to be aligned to something like the North Star or the constellation of Orion or Pleiades or, you know, one of those type of things. But the interesting thing is they loaded all this stuff into a computer and they found out that what's really going on is because the planet has this wobble, which generates a cone, and at the far end of the cone is essentially a circle produced by the imaginary axis of the planet. The so-called pole star that we see now, which is probably still Polaris, and represents the instantaneous dead spot in the sky, so to speak, after a few hundred years, that will change to another star, another location, because of this wobble. But the amazing thing is that the final analysis of the placement of the Great Pyramid of Cheops is such that it's oriented towards the center of the circle that's made by the wobble of the planet, which is the true pole of the entire eclectic. And so it goes without saying that they had to have knowledge of many, many things in order to do this. They had to know, for instance, the tilt of the Earth with respect to its axis. They had to know that there was, in fact, a wobble or a precession. And they had to have an enormous degree of familiarity with the astrological events that occur above the Earth, which only comes from centuries and centuries of observation and recording. And then on top of that, they had to have a very, very fluent ability in some pretty complex mathematics in order to make all this happen. And what irks me is the darn thing is sitting there, what's left of it, and it's not going to go away, and it is oriented, as we've been discussing. So how did it get there, and how did it have that particular alignment if the ancients were just a bunch of bumbling idiots, as we are taught to believe? You know, it's a very, very peculiar state of affairs that they can ignore this. And, of course, one of the ways that they get away with it, at least they appear to get away with it, is by saying, well, the pyramid can't be that old. You know, so they imagine that it was built, some 36 or 3,800 years ago, whatever. But my personal feeling is that it's probably a lot older than that.
Yes, as is mine. At one time, it is said that the pyramid actually was coated with a thick layer of alabaster, which made it highly visible from space. And I guess any time of the day or night it was visible. And that's been taken. The fact that so many people describe the pyramids of Giza, I'm speaking of, or any pyramid for that matter, was constructed for the purpose of being a mausoleum for pharaohs. And I don't think that that's actually why certain pharaohs or queens were buried inside or underneath such structures. I think it had to do with the fact that they discovered that there was not this decay, and that somehow if they were to go into the afterlife, and having read the book, Egyptian Book of the Dead, there was a strong belief in an afterlife, and that the departing individual had to be guided to the higher realms. There was a pathway to that, and that being buried there might assist in that because of the mystical properties of the pyramid. Animals that have been found dead in the pyramid, dying because of thirst, getting lost, dying of hunger, maybe even panic and fear, are rounded up and collected in a large receptacle outside the entrance, and until it's filled, and then someone comes and picks it up and they dump them. These animals aren't decaying whatsoever. They're in a state of suspended animation, or mummified, as you said. So the mummies weren't a result of the wrappings and oils and herbs that they used. That was a ritual that was performed, maybe to make that soul be more receptive upon arriving at their destination, departing the physical world. Certainly, those oils didn't have the ability to mummify. If they did, I'd start sending a bunch of it to Washington, D.C. tomorrow morning. So.
Well, my take is very similar to yours. The only thing that's different about it is there's a very large period of time, a very large block of time between the Old Kingdom and the Middle Kingdom, for instance, mm-hmm. and, of course, the latter dynasties or the more modern, the Greco-Roman era of Egypt. But in the very early times, it's quite possible that they may have retained a great deal more information about how this the pyramid was built and what it was for, and it may have been functioning at a much higher level of intensity due to the fact that the outer casing wasn't stripped, the pyramidon was still in place, or the capstone, as some mm-hmm. people call it, was still in place. And so are all the internal workings. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff removed from the pyramid, you know, by the time it was discovered in recent years. And yeah. So in that regard, you know, the mummification thing may have been like a, almost like a service. You know, you would take the departed in there and leave them in the sarcophagus or something for 2-3 days or whatever, and then they may have come out, you know, totally mummified. And then when the passage of time caused a regression or a collapse of the knowledge that was associated with the original structure, people may have started using chemicals and secondary means to achieve the same thing, because there's thousands of years involved, you know, in time. But I also think that there might have been a much more amazing explanation for that whole thing, and it ties back to that four-dimensional aspect that I was mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
Of all people, Napoleon, who conquered Egypt, had a very peculiar experience. Nobody knows exactly what it was, but his own men say that he spent the night in there in the king's chamber sometime during his occupation in that country, and he was never the same after that, and he totally refused to talk about whatever it was he experienced. But the interesting thing was, on his deathbed, where did he die? Alba? I forget now.
I'm not sure.
But anyway, on his deathbed, many years later, he brought the subject up, and it was almost like he really wanted to get it off his chest. And whoever was in the room with him apparently was either not interested enough or didn't coax him or something. And then he's reported to have said, "Oh, well, you'll never believe it anyway." And then he expired. But if you read the rites of resurrection that have to do with the ancient beliefs, and you read some of the most early writings pertaining to, for instance, the Masons, their rites are supposedly handed down from many thousands of years ago. What is suggested is that it was a temple of initiation, and that the reason for the preservation was that with the right preparation, the initiate would be placed in the sarcophagus and encouraged to die by artificial means. His body would be totally preserved, and he would essentially wander in the cosmos as a spirit and be allowed to return to his present vehicle and resurrect. And once he'd gone through this process, then it was impossible for him to be a normal man after that, because he had too much occult or spiritual knowledge, or whatever you want to call it, having acquired it and brought it back with him, would definitely change you considerably. And, you know, one of the beliefs is that the material that was used to encourage this entire process was the white powder gold, which we talked about on another show or several shows, which was also referred to as the semen of the cosmos. But when you take this in its proper quantity and you have the necessary preliminary training, it changes the level of your consciousness and jacks you up to the point where you're operating in the spiritual realm anyway, and then to recline in the sarcophagus and go through the whole ritual, apparently something really interesting happens. And I told you the story, I think, about a fellow researcher, a friend of mine, who had met that doctor that was studying the blood chemistry of people who were dying. And he actually did so many tests that he was able to duplicate the blood gases artificially. And then when he breathed that into his own body, even though he wasn't dying, it tricks the brain into thinking that you are. And it plays back your life tape so that you see everything that you did since you were born. And somehow that releases the spirit, because I know a guy who went through it. And he invented things that are so far out that he barely understands them himself, and he openly admits that he brought this back with him after he had inhaled this gas. So it's an interesting concept, and it may be that the pyramid is used for many, many purposes that we just barely understand today.
Okay, to comment on your remark about Napoleon, it's said that he died at Longwood, St. Helena, in the British Empire. That was on May 5th, 1821, at the ripe old age of 51.
Wow, he was young.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree with what you're saying. My metaphysical understanding of the pyramid is that the apex is aligned with Alcyone, which is the twin star to our sun. Now, for someone not only to do what was done in terms of equally dividing the land masses of the earth, or really pinpointing the center of the earth in a sense, but to be aligned with a star system in another part of the galaxy is a pretty phenomenal feat. Do you think this was accomplished by slaves rolling these gigantic rocks on top of logs, like has been depicted in many movies? I hardly think that's how it was done.
Well, you know, that's the tip of the iceberg, to be real honest with you. I mean, you know, there were several different types of stone that we used in the pyramids. The granite, you know, was taken from a quarry that was quite a ways away. Some of the limestone casings were taken from the Giza Plateau itself. But the interesting thing is that the quarry where the majority of the construction or core stones came from is a very strange place in its own right, and nobody even writes about that. You know, the idea that Egyptian slaves took copper chisels and went in and quarried the stone and then worked it to such an incredible degree of accuracy that you can't slip a razor blade between any particular stone and the adjoining stone is just beyond comprehension. But more than that is if you see these quarries, it's really amazing. I mean, I was reading about it just earlier today. It's a brush up for the show, and there are several huge hills in close vicinity, maybe like within 10 miles or so of the final structure. And unlike our way of doing quarrying today, like where they have an open pit situation and they go in and, just split the stones and then pick them up and take them out with cranes and stuff like that and then finish working them externally. The strangest thing about this was that they quarried into the side of these hills and then opened up a huge, vast interior quarry that was actually underneath the cap of the hill. They didn't bother to, tunnel down from the top. They went in from the sides, and then once they're in there, they quarried down, leaving a series of terraces as they went. Well, you know, if you just stop and think about that, just doing that is extraordinary for the time period that we're talking about. And if you couple that with the nonsense about all these slaves with copper chisels and wooden mallets, I think the poor boys would still be at it today myself if that was the true method that they used. Because the work involved is off the scale. You know, there was almost as much work done quarrying the stones as there was building the Bloody Pyramid.
Yeah, and to me, it seems, my intuition tells me that they used sound and light to do all this. The light could have easily been lasers making those cuts. And it wasn't a technology necessarily available to those people, but they had outside help. See, this is why all of this history is obfuscated from the mainstream consciousness, because they have to admit that there is life elsewhere. This is why all these mysteries are enshrouded in spin. No pun intended, because I know we could talk about vortexes too. Have you seen the Rockefeller room there at the Pyramid of Giza?
The Rockefeller room? Well, first of all, I've never been there.
Oh,
but what do you mean by the Rockefeller room?
That's the porta potty outside the main entrance.
Oh. No, I definitely haven't seen it.
Okay. I was just wondering. Well,
let me ask you a question about that. Is it a major attraction?
It is for some, yes. Yeah, you know, the Rockefellers have, it's just an inside joke, folks. Don't take it seriously tonight. There's been an obsession, especially with David Rockefeller. And I wrote about this in my Three Stooges Go to Washington piece because of the exhumation of, and really it was the annihilation of the sarcophagus of Arsinoe, likely that they were matching or making a comparison of the DNA to that of Cleopatra in the manufacture of the long-legged Mac Daddy in the White House. And that they sat on this for 26 years, to me, doesn't make sense. Supposedly, they discovered Arsinoe's sarcophagus in 1926, and they removed the head. They took the head and took it to Austria, and a scientist there, obviously working for the Rockefellers, did some research and some experiments and came up with a conclusion that it might be of royalty. Well, they darn well knew what tombs they raided. They had plenty of evidence. So they never really told us the story. Their goal was to go into cloning from this, knowing full well that the bodies are preserved because of those energies. And, of course, when you have designs to take over the whole world, you want to get your hands on as many spoils as you can before all hell breaks loose, which has been a lifetime mission of the Rockefellers, sending their own out to the jungles of Borneo and New Guinea, and certainly sending scientists like Dr. Charles Breasted, who was the primary archaeologist and anthropologist that worked for the Rockefellers. There were some others that they used more in more recent times, but just to have this obsession with things Egyptian, and then the ties to Montauk and likely ties to the pyramids in the United States. Southwestern Ohio had a pyramid that they totally dismantled to hide the fact that it was there. They took it, they just destroyed it. And they've done this, I'm sure, in other parts of the country as well. So,
years ago, what's very interesting about what you just said, years ago, when I was working with Ivan Sanderson, one of his many interests was the vortices on the planet. And, of course, everybody knows about the one that's off the coast of Florida there. What do they call it? For goodness sake. The place where all the ships...
The Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah. Everybody's familiar with the Bermuda Triangle, right? But according to Ivan's research, there were actually 12 of these places around the planet, some of which were actually overland, by the way. And when he plotted this, it actually, their locations made a sine wave that oscillated around the equator of the planet. And, of course, one of the points was the Bermuda Triangle area. There was another one on the other side of the world, and I think in the Sea of Japan or someplace like that. But the thing that was interesting about it was that these areas all apparently had vortices of some type of energy, and the fact that they were all situated within so many degrees of the equator would almost give you the impression that these were some kind of eddy currents due to the spinning of the planet and due to the distribution of the orgone and the atmosphere and all this kind of stuff, that you would get these whirligigs situated in various areas. And the other correlation that was made was that some of the pyramids, a lot of the pyramids that were once on the planet, looked as if they had been strategically placed with respect to these vortices. You had some in Mexico, you had some, of course, in Giza, you had some in China, which a lot of people don't realize, and actually you had pyramids in the United States, both in the Southwest and in various parts of the East, and there are pyramids in South America, so, and Mexico, I might add, you know. So the one possibility is that these structures were either tapping some of this energy or perhaps stabilizing it, because the ancients talked about a grid of this energy surrounding the Earth. It's been rediscovered in modern times by various people like that Captain Bruce Cathy that wrote this story about the energy grid surrounding the planet. The extraterrestrials talk about the fact that our planet moves through an energy grid. And so, you know, you add all of this up, and it brings to mind some interesting things. You know, you talk about dismantling the pyramids because they don't want it, they don't want people to know it's there. Well, it could very well be that if you dismantle too many of them, you may incite some type of instability, which we will all regret, because we don't really know enough about what we're doing to be tampering with certain things. And stuff that's been put here by higher intelligences, you know, tens of thousands of years ago, perhaps, for purposes that are beyond us at this point, shouldn't be tampered with. You know, there's so much evidence on the planet that there were other civilizations here that were wiped out. And we don't really know what wiped them out. We should bear that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, Jim, have you ever speculated on the possibility that what is occurring in these areas that you were describing, such as the Bermuda Triangle, might be a result of underground bases or tunnels?
Oh, it could be a result of so many things. The first thing that came to my mind intuitively, Don, was the Homer polar generator. You know, if you take a disc of aluminum, let's say, and you rotate it in a magnetic field, if you can actually see the currents that flow in this disc, they all make little self-closing loops.
Mm-hmm.
And that results in heating of the disc. Of course, you can take power out of it, too. That's another story. But it results in the heating of the disc. And I've always looked at the possibility that the main vortex which spins the planet, I mean, the planet is really like a big stack of a whole bunch of disks that are different dimensions.
Yes.
You know, you can approximate a sphere with a pile of disks if they're all different sizes.
Yes.
And so if the vortex turns the planet, as indeed they talk about in India and the Mahabharata, they talk about it in the ancient Asape. Lots of people talk about it. Even the contactees mentioned the vortex that turns the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see any reason why you wouldn't have three-dimensional whirligigs or vortices or eddy currents or whatever you want to call them. And, you know, if everything is in balance, they sit in certain areas and do what God created them to do. But if the planet is out of whack, or if we interfere with, you know, the way in which these energies are supposed to flow, then it's hard to say what they'll do. And you know what? We are interfering with it anyway, even if it's not by intent. Did you ever stop to think of the effect that literally hundreds and hundreds of millions of cars have when they're lined up all over the world in different directions and channeling the magnetic energy through all these cars, because they won't, you know, the flux lines can't flow in the normal pattern anymore. And we're taking tens of thousands of gallons of oil out of the earth. Our greed and stupidity motivate us to do that. But we don't really know how we're changing the structure of the planet when we do that.
Well, I've always looked at the building of skyscrapers the same way, too.
Sure. You know, there's so many things we don't know, and we're so arrogant, we just continue doing what we're doing. And I hate to always be a harbinger of doom, but I just got the feeling that sooner or later, we're going to have to pay a tab for all of what we've done.
Yeah. Well, in regard to time frame, it is said in metaphysical circles that the year 2012 is when our sun will be in alignment with the star Alcyone. And so the pyramids will probably play some kind of role in that, whether that's the mitigation or the collection of, you know, let's say the accumulation or the generation of that energy in the pyramid. And that is becoming evident just on the basis of how people are waking up. There are higher energies, and those of us in tune with those energies can feel them. I know you can. I don't have to ask you if you can. I know you can.
Well, I hope there's lots of people who can, because it certainly seems to be either ignored or incapable of detection in the lower life forms that run the planet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's an issue of consciousness. I mean, you know, if those of us that can think outside the box and are living as best we can some semblance of a spiritual life, at least recognizing spirit and communicating and creating in that realm, we tend to pick up more of that. It eventually, the whole planet will be bathed in that energy, and there's no escaping it. And they know this. It's the reason behind chemtrails, part of the reason, not the exclusive reason, but certainly to reduce the population is not going to stop what's happening from happening. So what they're doing is rather insane. Not yeah. rather insane, it's totally insane.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's just we know that these various cycles happen over and over again, and it makes perfect sense because even though the distances are vast, you know, when our galaxy is moving through the various regions of space and it's encountering different phenomenon, our tiny little speck is just like one insignificant particle in that whole movement. And it's going along for the ride, whether we like it or not. But the thing to remember is that just like we have a repetition of days every 24 hours, and we have a repetition of years every 365.25 days, there's another cycle we talked about today is the precession of the planetary axis. That's 26,000 years. So obviously there's a cycle associated with whatever is going to happen in 2012. And the interesting thing is the Mayans apparently not only knew about it, but they recorded it on their calendar. And both the Mayans and the Hopi Indians and several other ancient peoples in various parts of the world have talked about the fact that there have been at least five worlds, meaning that at least five times that man has risen to a state similar to the one we're in now, only to be destroyed and start all over again, mostly from our own stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
And so this planet has got to be extraordinarily ancient, and so is the race or races that are upon it. It's just a shame that it seems like we never learn whatever the lesson is, because if we did, we could avoid, you know, the calamities that might be coming.
Yes. Now, I'd like to sort of segue into an aspect of this. We're almost out of time here, Jim, but I wanted to refer to an experience I had last summer. I was sitting in Wrigley Field watching a baseball game, and as I sat there, there was a moment the game was going on, and I found myself sort of reading the energy. Chicago is a an interesting city in many ways. It's somewhat of a microcosm of what goes on in New York, but Chicago's known for crime in a very unusual way because it's controlled the government, I think, ever since Chicago was built. And I'm sitting there in Wrigley Field, way up in the nosebleed section, out in right field. And I'm sort of looking at the whole image, you know, with my peripheral vision, and sensing this ancient energy, this dark energy coming up through the ground. And I'm observing the crowd, and no one else is seeing this, so I'm just sort of rolling with this feeling and thinking, asking myself, where's this energy coming from? The first thing that came to mind was Al Capone. Almost as if Al Capone, who was originally from Brooklyn, New York, ended up carrying out his career in crime with his headquarters in Chicago. And I wondered why he chose Chicago. I wondered why the system there was so corrupt, and is today, by the way, as much as ever, if not more, because you've got a totally corrupt legal system there, which really is a big money laundering factory. And it's bent on destroying the human family. And we've done other shows on that, so there's no point in going there other than to just talk about this energy. But then I asked myself, how old is this energy? How long has this energy been emanating from underneath the city? And I'm convinced that there's a city underneath there and many other cities, not just in modern times, but these are ancient cities. And it took me back to a period of about 40,000 years ago. And I had a conversation with General Jeremiah about this, and he alluded to the fact that he had been schooled on a settlement of beings from another part of our galaxy called Gavilon, and that they had come here and they had set up their kingdom, if you want to call it that, on this planet with the headquarters in Chicago. And he asked me if I felt this anywhere else, and I said, sure, I feel the same energy in Detroit, in Toledo, in Cleveland, in Pittsburgh, in Philadelphia, and, of course, New York. Those are the primary places where this civilization, if you want to use that term, had their operation set up, at least in terms of where our country is right now. And they were run off the planet. But these were evil, evil beings, very corrupt beings. And it's no wonder that energy is still there, that energy is still emanating from underground. And I'm convinced that there may be technology, there might even be some remnants of those people living underground. Now, we certainly know about underground bases and tunnels and the connections, and they're not just on the dry portions of land. They're under water in the oceans, and so there's a reason for this to go on. Is it just secrecy, or is it just or is it possible that it's related to technology? You want to comment on that before we close the show?
Sure, if I can. Well, as I mentioned to you in some earlier discussions, you know, there have been quite a few people who have claimed that they've run into these beings and that they didn't all get tossed off the planet. And originally you had two factions of these extraterrestrials or whatever they were. They were living here and they were very antagonistic to each other. You had the Terros, who was supposedly much like us and lived on the surface of the planet, and they were always trying to do constructive things. And then you had these Deros, which were burrowing people that had these tunneling machines, and their tunnels are supposedly all over the place. You know, some of them are still in use, some of them are abandoned, whatever. But they had technologies that apparently allowed them to invade the minds of people that were of lower consciousness, let's say, and inject thoughts into their minds or images and drive them crazy. And then they would get a big charge out of watching the havoc that would come from the psychosis that they introduced. And at any rate, make a long story short, some of these technologies, some of these machines and whatever you want to call it, along with some of the survivors from that time period, are still supposed to be in various areas of the planet. Now, there was a guy who encountered a tunnel like this and was intercepted by beings when he tried to explore it. And later, he wrote a book about it. It's called The Shaver Mysteries, and it's I think Gray Barker published it back in the 50s. But at any rate, it's a story about these two races and all of the various things that were happening on the planet, and the fact that there's a remnant of them still interfering with the people on the surface. Now, I'm not saying I believe that, but, you know, you have to have an open mind, and considering all of the things that are going on and all the rest of the information that's suppressed, I mean, our own government is just as evil as these guys are supposed to be, so it could be possible. Anything is possible.
Yeah, well, we can certainly go into this in more detail on another show. Unfortunately, we're out of time. And I appreciate your insights and your input to tonight's conversation and your lecture, actually. Would you like to leave a parting thought with the audience before we say goodnight?
Well, you know, the only parting thought that pops into my head intuitively is that despite all this negative stuff that we have talked about and all of the horrible things that are going on in the world, as partially spiritual beings, because we have a spiritual side and a physical side, the one thing that's important to remember is that the higher forces in the universe always respond to intent. And if we go through life with the intent of doing good whenever we can, and the intent of imitating the Creator, and the intent of producing a better world for ourselves and our children, somehow the Creator will make that happen. If we ignore everything that's going on and just say, oh, well, you know, whatever happens, happens, then that's the thought that you're putting out, and that becomes the intent, and you can't complain about what eventually transpires. Just remember that.
Okay, words for the wise. Well said. With that, Jim, I'm going to wish you a great weekend, and I look forward to your next visit on Evident Footprints, and thank you. And I'll say goodnight.
Thank you for having me, Don. I appreciate it.
Okay. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special Friday night guest, Mr. Jim Murray. By the way, go to my website, directlightproductions.com. If you or someone you know is interested in some help with an invention, and developing a prototype, maybe even consulting with Jim as to the practicality of that invention and how he can help you, certainly you want to visit my sponsors page and read about Accurate Machine and Tool Company. Both George Hamill and Jim Murray are available either by phone or email. Her information is on that page. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for tuning in to Evident Footprints, as well as blogtalkradio.com. Over at BBS, we want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me this coming Monday when our special guest will be Dr. A. Truat. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.